He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday, the March 16th edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. Today is the Strait of Hormuz edition of the Best Stocks Now show. Right now we have a wonderful start to the markets here so far today. The market seems to be putting the Strait of Hormuz on the back burner. And as a consequence, the Dow right now is up 324 points, which puts it at 40,883. The NASDAQ is up 305 right now. The memory stock's having a huge day. The NASDAQ is up 1.4%. The Russell or the S&P 500 is up 1%. We'll call it 1%. It's up 65 points. Meanwhile, you're getting a little bounce in the gold stocks today. They've been weak lately. Oil is coming down a little bit. It's down at 1.42%. It's under 100 at least, at 94.94. There's your lottery numbers for the day. The 10 years at 4.22 has come down a little bit. Bitcoin having a big day today. Bitcoin is up 2,603 to 74,172. So most all market participants happy today, including myself. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite. Are you happy today, Barry?
Yeah, I'm. You know, it's good to see some green on the screen over the whole weekend. You know, you feel like it. You know, you get bombarded with pessimism if you happen to do much reading or watching, I guess. But you know, we got nothing to complain. We got the green on the screen, and we've got our NCAA brackets are out. So I've got to print that up and take a look at it. See if I can beat the kids in the household. So.
Well, let's do an internal one here with Gunderson Capital
Management. Let's do it.
Okay, and everybody put in $20. We'll see. I'll win easily, but we'll see. Anyways, look, if you read the newsletter over the weekend, you got my current take on the market. We're going through another crisis in the market, and if you listen to Wall Street, it's trying to tell you that we're in a never-ending war and the Strait of Hormuz will be closed forever and oil is going to go up to $200 per barrel and the economy is going to sink and inflation is going to roar. And that's why I don't listen to Wall Street too much. In fact, I do my best to tune it out. But, you know, that's one of the beauties of doing the newsletter every Saturday, Friday and Saturday, is it's quiet. The market is closed. The noise is down. The noise level is down. And I can just look at charts and interpret. You know, in my mind, weigh things out. And, you know, I came away with the fact that earnings estimates have not been impacted whatsoever. I would guess that the stocks that are impacted by higher oil prices are being offset in the S&P 500 by the oil stocks, which are going to benefit from all of this, right? The tanker stocks, the drillers, the refiners. And on the other side of the coin, you've got the airlines and the cruise ships and whatnot. And so really,
and have nots, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of times the market can be a zero sum game, right? And so what's bad for one side might be good for another sector, right?
Well, I also made the point today, we continue to own three hedges. I said, I just love it, days when my hedges are down, because that means we're roaring in the market, okay? Would you rather have it the other way and have your hedges booming That means you're having a terrible day in the market.
That'd be like having an insurance claim. It's like, we want it to be there, but we don't necessarily want to have one.
I just love it when I die. We can collect that life insurance benefit. But, I still think it's prudent to have a few hedges in place because there are a lot of what-ifs right now. As a country gets backed into a corner, especially a rogue nation like Iran, you just don't know what they're going to lash out with. And so we have to keep that in mind. But, at the same time, it seems like they're losing their firepower and their ability to do horrible atrocities. They're losing that ability more and more as their military is totally wiped out. So, we look at oil, it's probably going to start coming back down at some point. But as I titled the newsletter over the weekend, the key spot in the world right now is a pretty small area. If you've got a globe, you can take a pin and push it into the Strait of Hormuz. That seems to be the choke point in the world. Although I see today that Saudi Arabia is offering an alternative route.
I didn't know we had one.
Yeah, and if you look at a map, there is an alternative route. I'll get a little more detail on that. I'm going to go over that story here in a little bit. There's also some big stories out there in tech today. The memory stocks are just soaring today. Oh, my gosh. And, of course, we have a pretty good position there in the South Korean ones, in SanDisk. Micron will report on Wednesday. That's probably going to be one of the biggest reports of the quarter when all is said and done.
We also get Fed speak on Wednesday. We'll have a Fed decision, which will probably be no move. But we'll get a little bit of talk. We also get PPI this week, I think, around there. So we've got a few things in the pipeline.
Yeah, I think Jerome Powell is just a non-player these days, other than being a big old Grinch.
He might be a thorn. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He might be a thorn in the side, I guess.
He's definitely not a fan of the current administration. Well, the fog of war, obviously, it does eventually start to clear, and crises start to clear. It was last April. It was about this time last year when the market started to tank, and we had a major crisis. And I had to do the same thing back then. I had to set aside everything on Friday and Saturday morning when it was quiet and analyze and look at things and weigh things out in my mind. But the most important thing that I do is I look at those earnings estimates and what impact events in the world are having on those earnings. And, as you sit here a year later after all that tariff war and all of the different things that Wall Street was saying was going to happen, and other analysts and CNBC and Bloomberg and the rest, it did just the opposite of what they said it was going to do. We're having record earnings, record profit margins, record earnings growth, the trade deficit hasn't really reduced that much. We're not seeing that. But on the overall market, that whole trade war thing and scenario may have made a lot of people mad, may have ruined some relationships around the world. But for the S&P 500, it had very little impact. And, of course, we've seen record highs in the market since then. And now we've got another little crisis going on in the markets. And once again, it gives you an opportunity to step back and watch and see what it does to earnings and see where the winners are and where the losers are. And you go from there. So, anyways, Micron had a big week last week. And, of course, it was up 15% last week. And there's a lot of ancillary stocks that trade along with Micron and SanDisk, like Western Digital and Seagate. They also had a good week. Micron was up 15%. I think SanDisk was up like 20% last week. It's up big again today. As oil climbs past 100 late last week and over the weekend, but now it's dropping down into the mid-90s, 94.94, as the Iran war disrupts the global oil supply. But, you know, things have a way of straightening out and finding a new path and finding alternatives and finding, you know, the company's CEOs are pretty smart. They figure things out. There is some talk, although we are not there yet, of a deal of Iran kind of waving a white flag. That would take a lot for them to do that. They'd have to swallow their pride, as they say, and back down and accept some concessions so that they can go on. I don't think the current regime has that opportunity to go on, but they're not there yet. Trump says an Iran deal is not good enough yet as the war widens. And the attacks on Iran's oil infrastructure continue to heighten. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. We don't really know who the leader is of Iran right now. Supposedly it's Khomeini's son, but nobody has seen him. They don't even know if he's alive. Some say he was badly disfigured and injured in the attack on the leadership, which I would think is probably very possible. In the meantime, U.S. oil CEOs are warning Trump officials that the energy turmoil could worsen. During recent meetings at the White House and discussions with Energy Secretary Chris Wright and Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, leaders from Exxon, Chevron, Conoco said continued disruption to shipping through the narrow waterway, there's that Strait of Hormuz again, put an underline around that, could keep oil markets volatile, the Wall Street Journal reported on Sunday. Of course, aren't they kind of laughing all the way to the bank in some way or another? Exxon and Chevron and Conoco, all of a sudden the product that they sell went from about the high 50s per barrel to over 100 per barrel.
Yeah, so at worst their reserves are worth more, you know. I mean, on the balance sheet.
Exxon CEO Darren Wood said prices could climb further if speculative trading accelerates. That's one problem, is the speculative trading, which we've seen in crypto, ran it to 125. We saw the speculative trading in silver that ran it to, $120 per ounce. And now a lot of this trading in oil, it really has nothing to do with supply and demand in reality. Some of it does. A lot of it does, obviously. But the speculative traders are also a big problem in that. And it doesn't take much to get them to run like a bunch of cockroaches, though, Barry. A little bit of good news, and you'll see a big drop. We saw it a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was early last week on Monday or whatever.
Yeah, and the key is to look at the December, you know, look at some of those further contracts, because obviously the number we see in front of us is the most recent contract that's going to be, you know, that's going to settle, the most recent spot price. So it's interesting if you look back at, you know, look down the road at, say, October, you know, November or December prices, those are kind of the ones that, you know, over time you want to begin to come down. Because that means we're getting closer to an actual solution. Those current spot prices are likely going to be elevated because, you know, that's oil that likely needs to be delivered in the next 30 days or something. So.
Yes, and the spigots that they have to turn right now, easing the sanctions on Russian oil, releasing emergency reserves, suspending a law that restricts shipments of crude between U.S. ports. I didn't know anything about that. I'd have to do a little more study on that one. And increasing oil flows between Venezuela and the United States. Well, that's a new one that we have that we didn't have before. And, of course, the world does not need $120 oil. So, anyways, that's taking place in the background. Saudi Arabia, here's this alternate Red Sea route. Saudi Arabia is offering long-term customers the option of receiving their crude supply for April through the Yanbu port on the Red Sea. I've got to get out a map and look at that. Bloomberg News reported, offering an alternate route as the Strait of Hormuz remains effectively closed. Customers selecting the Yanbu port will only get part of their monthly crude supply due to constraints on how much the pipeline to the port can carry. So I guess they have to pipe that oil to that port for pickup. Traders who had been informed by state-run Saudi Aramco say buyers can choose to receive their supply from the Persian Gulf, but they may not get all of it if the Strait of Hormuz remains closed. So anyway, that's Aramco. Ramped up shipments through Yanbu since the war broke out. Then you've got Chris Wright, who I think is doing a pretty good job. I mean, he comes from the oil industry. He was the CEO of Liberty Energy. He says there's no guarantees on oil prices with the Strait of Hormuz unsafe. That seems to be the biggest solution. Probably easier said than done is to make the Strait of Hormuz safe, which, 20%, a very critical shipping route for global supplies. He was on ABC News. He's become a pretty big guy on TV these days with what's going on in the world. You never know.
Yeah,
one week is Christy Noem, right? And the next week it's Chris Wright.
Profile's been elevated a little bit, right?
Yes. Marco Rubio's been elevated.
Rubio before war, and then once war kicked in, right, energy prices became a thing, and so...
Yeah, you know, and Noem's stock is dropping. Dropped. I think she had political presidential aspirations. That was supposedly was the rumor there. He says there's no guarantees in war at all. All I can guarantee is the situation would be dramatically worse without this military operation to defang, there's the key, defang the Iranian regime. So all eyes right now on the Strait of Hormuz. Kevin Hassett, meanwhile, who pretty much is Trump's head of the economy, he says the U.S. economy can weather the Iran war, as officials expect the conflict to end within weeks. Well, okay, we're not talking months. We're definitely not talking years. Years was Afghanistan.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's important. Look at those, look at those spot prices that are towards the end of the year. If those begin to come down, that is, that's telling you that, traders are betting that that things are going to kind of subside at some particular point in time.
Well, Hassett says that it would take 4 to 6 weeks to complete this mission. Nobody really knows, obviously. There's a lot of wild cards out there. There's a lot of unknowns, and that's that fog of war. So in the interim, we go back and focus on other companies out there. In other areas of the world, like Boise, Idaho, where Micron Technology, they're going to build a second plant in Taiwan. Well, okay, I guess they feel pretty safe about Taiwan. China doesn't seem to be making any moves towards Taiwan. In fact, Trump has invited China in to help clear the Strait of Hormuz. Who's the biggest buyer Iranian oil?
That'd be them.
But I don't see a Chinese ship on one side of a tanker and a U.S. ship on the other side of a tanker escorting it through the Strait of Hormuz. That's hard for me to imagine. But he has invited them in, and he was scheduled. He's the kind of guy, they say, hell, he's going to have to put off his meeting with Xi in 2 weeks. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that'll fly to China for a couple days and then back to the U.S., and then he'll be campaigning in Wisconsin the next day. You never know with that guy. Okay, when we come back, we've got a new macro forecast out from Goldman Sachs. And, of course, I put mine out in the newsletter on Saturday. Let's see how close we are to each other. This is the Best Stocks Now show.
Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Goldman Sachs today has their target price. They have adjusted a little bit. They say the U.S. stock market still has room to climb. I agree with that. Projecting the S&P 500 could reach 7,600 by year end. Now, I would just say that Goldman Sachs is on the low side. If you take a look at the consensus estimates on the S&P 500 and the consensus target price, it's more up around 82 to 8300. And I want to say Goldman Sachs was at 8000. Maybe they've adjusted for this war here down by 400 points. But still, to get to 7600 from where we are right now on the S&P 500 at 60, let's see, the S&P 500 right now is at 67, let's call it 6,700. They're saying 7,600 by the end. That's 900 points. That's pretty good. And I would also say that with this recent pullback in the market, a lot of stocks, a lot of indexes have pulled back to their critical long-term support lines, the 200-day moving average. You're also seeing the best value in the market that we've seen probably since a year ago. You'd have to go back a year ago during that plunge of late March and April to find this much upside potential. Now, that doesn't mean we can't get even lower than where we are now and see even more upside potential. But yeah, this is the best. And in fact, the forward P.E. ratio of the S&P 500 went down to 20.66 on Saturday, on Friday.
Well, and
we were at 23, Barry, not too long ago.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at the chart here, and NASDAQ's a great example of it from basically from the end of October. It's really been in a trading range. And like you said, it's right now, you know, about that 22,000 level has really been that support line through that entire period. And we're, you know, kind of at 22,386. And so also, if you overlay NVIDIA with that, you're going to see a pretty similar chart just because it's so much of that index.
Definitely. And I saw something interesting. Barron's, which is known, I mean, they definitely lean towards value. Not lean towards value. They are a value rag, I would call it, newspaper that comes out every Saturday. Guess what was on the cover of Barron's as a screaming value buy? It said, shut up and buy it. Microsoft. And, of course, they made the case for several other big tech stocks as being value stocks. And NVIDIA was another one. And we've been making the case for NVIDIA. Microsoft definitely.
That conference is today, right? I think he's speaking today, which it'll be interesting to see what the. I think he's speaking maybe around 2 p.m. I don't know if that's West Coast time or East Coast time, but it'll have an effect on the market at some point today.
Yes, but you know, here's a big differentiation between what we do at Gunderson Capital and what Barron's does. When I put NVIDIA and Microsoft side by side and do a 5-year valuation, I get about 55% upside for Microsoft and 100% upside for NVIDIA. And I think Barron's is just looking at the valuation criteria.
Oh, yeah.
P.E. ratio.
To the performance or momentum side.
Yes, which value investors, they don't pay attention really to growth or momentum. They're just looking at those valuations, which kind of silly to me to not look at forward target prices and where the growth might take the stock. Instead, they're taking kind of a snapshot, a Polaroid of today and where it's at, freezing it in time, and saying these are the juiciest values, but maybe it should be at those valuations, right? Maybe
right.
It deserves to be at those low valuations. So,
yeah, and the thing is, this is where you get caught in these value traps, where
exactly.
For an extended period of time, if you know, you and I can get in a room and say, hey, this stock's $50, should be worth $100. If no one else, we could be certainly correct, and if no one, but if no one outside the room thinks the same thing, then the stock's never going anywhere. And so
no.
The chart is what tells you that other people are discovering
and the 5-year valuation.
Value. Right,
the
exactly.
5-year valuation is absolutely critical, and a critical part of that 5-year valuation that value investors leave out is the growth. The projected growth over the next 5 years. And I don't know why they leave that out. I'm just a guy. I studied value investing for several years. I studied momentum investing for several years. And I said, why do the momentum guys ignore value? They got clobbered in 2000 by doing that. And why do the value guys ignore momentum? That doesn't seem to make sense. Can't they come together and agree on combining those two? And that's what I've done. I don't know of anybody else that's done that. Maybe I'll get a plaque somewhere on Wall Street someday for inventing the Best Stocks Now momentum method, momentum plus value method. I'm sure someone else has done something similar, but I haven't seen it yet. It's a quant system that is value-based and momentum-based. Here's the stock that I wish I would have kept. I got a little nervous about it. Nibius has got a big deal today with, I believe, NVIDIA or Meta, one of those. Look at that. Wow. Nibius is up.
Yeah,
and it's
thought
been
it was Meta, if I'm not mistaken. I know Meta did two announcements today, one that they're going to begin kind of doing some layoff. Yeah, and they're the ones that I think that partnered with for like a $27 billion deal, I believe.
Yeah, we've done well with Nebius in the past. Look, the problem with Nebius, the last four quarters, their sales growth, 425%, 625%, 355%, and those are probably, I'll put those four quarters of sales growth up against any stock in the entire market. But they're going to lose $2.50 this year, and they're going to lose $2.59 next year. They still haven't moved the needle towards profitability and earnings. The losses are still pretty great, which you still have to kind of sit back and ask yourself, how long is it going to take for them to turn this? Yeah, I'm sure if you listened in on one of their conference calls or sat down with them, and if you were an analyst covering the company, you'd have some kind of idea when they become cash flow positive and then, of course, earnings positive. I don't have that information. I don't see it on the horizon right now. But when you have that kind of sales growth, it seems pretty inevitable that eventually you're going to cross the line. This is now a $31 billion company, and they're based in the Netherlands over there with ASM Lithography and others. There's a lot of tech in the Netherlands, and they provide infrastructure to AI, which is a good place. A good place to be right now. That would be in the emerging growth. That's where we owned it, was in the emerging growth portfolio, because it does not have earnings yet. But it's probably one of the very best. Yeah, they got a $27 billion deal with Meta. And, of course, Meta's on a spending spree right now. Okay, Micron to build second Taiwan facility to boost their DRAM, and of course they're reporting Wednesday. Travel is getting costlier right now. Not a good time to book an airline ticket. And, of course, we'll have a date by tomorrow all firmed up. But right now it looks like April. Let me get my calendar out for Sarasota. It looks like we'll be at the Evan Hotel again in Lakewood Ranch. That seems to be, like, the best place. We looked at other places, and nobody wants to go downtown Sarasota anymore. And the new place in Longboat Key, they wanted an arm and a leg and another arm and a leg. Yeah. I like the place, but come on. It's ridiculous how much they get for that place. It looks like April 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. No, 7th, 8th, and 9th. April 7th, 8th, and 9th.
It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, right, Bill?
Yes. Okay, and I'll probably be doing the workshop on Wednesday the 8th at 7 p.m. at the Evan Hotel. That will fill up fast, and those appointments will fill up fast. Edie's just got to ink the deal. I'm just waiting for the ink for her to ink the deal. But we looked at several places, and we just decided that that's just our best place right now for doing what we like to do, meeting with folks for 3 days, one-hour appointments, a workshop on Wednesday night, and blackened mahi-mahi at some of our favorite places down there. And there's a lot of good ones. We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do. It is the weather you wanna follow. Hey, you gotta go where you wanna go, do what you wanna do.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. A couple interesting stories, and I'm going to connect a few dots here, Barry. Musk, Elon's ex-AI, is recruiting bankers to teach Grok finance. Okay, look, I'm just going to say, now let's connect a dot here. We have this other story right along with it. Private credit funds face massive redemption wave as wealthy investors head for the exits. Who do you think invented and put together private credit on Wall Street, Barry?
Yeah, right.
Probably
the finance guys. Yeah,
the Wharton Business School's brightest. And greediest, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I read an article, actually it was a pretty good article in the Wall Street Journal this weekend about, it was about an interview with, I don't think he thought it was going to be public, but I think his last name's Elliot, I'm trying to go by, but he's with Apollo, and he's essentially mentioned, he's saying, talks about areas of private credit that are, need to be marked down. His thoughts is certainly, small or medium-sized software companies. And so it was just it was an interesting piece coming from someone who,
they're also, up to their eyeballs.
They're in the private. I know. That's what I'm saying. So it was interesting to hear, their take or his take in terms of, I guess what Apollo's doing right and kind of maybe what some of these other firms may be doing wrong. But the bottom line is,
it's
seems
mess.
Like there is some concern and a lot of information out there on it. So
I don't know that I'd be recruiting bankers teach Grok finance. Maybe he's going down the wrong. The bankers are the ones, and a lot of the Wall Street guys ignore valuation on one hand, ignore momentum on the other hand. The 60-40 is being disproven here recently. It's not doing well at all in almost any environment, which has been a traditional. If you're just going to look at kind of a traditional asset allocation, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, or you do the age, you adjust it by age. Well, I'm 75 years old. Okay, 75% bonds, 25% stocks. You want Grok learning that from the bankers? That's another question I have. But anyways, wealthy investors are reportedly looking to withdraw more than $10 billion from some of the largest private. This is a big deal. This is a big problem because there's not liquidity underneath that. You know how they get liquidity? Dropping the price. Oh, there's liquidity. There's people willing to buy these big tranches of loans of private credit, but at what, 60 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar, and all of a sudden, this little thing that was giving you double-digit returns and holding its valuation is all of a sudden been cut by 40%. So you got a big problem there, a huge problem, and it was those same bankers that brought down the financial markets in 08 and 09, were it not for the TARP funds and the government bailout. Luckily, we have a big printing press, which helped the bankers a lot at that point in time. That was another very bad idea. But you've got Blue Owl and Blackstone and Carlyle Group, and the one you just mentioned, Apollo and Ares Capital. These are some of your biggest and finest, in quotation marks, that get the top graduates from the Wharton Business School and from the Harvard Business School, from the other business schools back there, your traditional bankers, and Goldman Sachs obviously gets the cream of the crop. As far as the educated, the Ivy League schools, I'm just wondering if that's where you get the best education on the markets and on. I realize there's a lot of things that are necessary, but as far as they sure made a lot of boo-boos over the years, and have gone down a lot of paths that were not good ones to go down. In fact, that was the next story. Rising energy prices are weakening the 60-40 portfolio strategy, says Peter Buchvar. I was on CNBC with him one time, Peter Buchvar. He was with, I can't think of the name. It's a great, big, huge bank. He's very, I like him a lot, but he's bad-mouthing the 60-40 strategy, which I don't like it at all. And then are you going to have Grok mimic Kathy Wood, for instance? I don't know. She's adding Joby, which is flying robo-taxis. In this environment, she's adding CRISP, which makes gene editing in a test tube, another stock that's gone nowhere. Tempus AI, which is another really far-out stock. But that's what she likes. She likes far-out stocks. She's also expanding positions in GeneDx, Canton Strategic, Circle Internet Group. Okay, I mean, that's follow her as your guru. Adobe in focus as Citi cuts price target. Now, there's another example. You could make an argument. Adobe's trading at the cheapest valuations it's ever traded at. And I'm sure it was mentioned in Barron's over the weekend. But it deserves to have those valuations, just like Target deserves to have the valuations that it has. And Home Depot, because there's no growth anymore in these stocks. So they get their multiples get punished. There is some lift in crypto today, I will say that. I don't know what drives crypto. Greed. I would say greed is the biggest force that drives crypto, and I would say the second biggest force that drives crypto is fear. We are out of time. We got through a lot of stuff today. I'm happy. I didn't think we would get through it, but we did. There was also an earnings report today from Dollar Tree. If you think that's a market leader, maybe you want to listen to that conference call today.
Yeah, it's
on Dollar Tree. And see if those margins are improving at all at Dollar Tree.
see how the tariffs are affecting that stuff, right? Where is it
yes.
coming from?
Well, we'll open up the reservation lines with ED 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, to book a one-hour appointment with the crew. And I'm going to have a couple new members of the crew on this trip that you'll meet. That will be interesting, and it'll be interesting for them, too. We've got a lot of irons in the fire right now here at Gunderson Capital. We are ramping up big time. And if you'd like to come to the workshop on Wednesday, right now, tentatively penciled in, just awaiting the inking of the agreement with the Even Hotel on Wednesday, April the 8th at 7 p.m. Or you don't have to be in Sarasota to meet with us. We meet with people all over the world on a daily basis. set up an appointment with us at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.